Today, I'm talking with Dr. Chloe Carmichael about harnessing the power of your anxiety for success with your health and your life. We'll be focusing on Maya Angelou's quote, "My mission in life is not merely to survive, but to thrive, and to do so with some passion, some compassion, some humor, and some style." So if you want to stop just surviving and start thriving, then this is the place for you. So the big question is, how do women over 40 like us keep weight off, have great energy, balance our hormones and our moods, feel sexy and confident, and master midlife? If you're like most of us, you're not getting the answers you need and remain confused and pretty hopeless to ever feel like yourself again. As an OBGYN, I had to discover for myself the truth about what creates a rock-solid metabolism, lasting weight loss, and supercharged energy after 40 in order to lose 100 pounds and fix my fatigue. Now, I'm on a mission. This podcast is designed to share the natural tools you need for impactful results and to give you clarity on the answers to your midlife metabolism challenges. Join me for tangible natural strategies to crush the hormone imbalances you're facing and help you get unstuck from the sidelines of life. My name is Dr. Kieran Dunstan. Welcome to the Hormone Prescription Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Hormone Prescription Podcast with Dr. Kieran. I'm so glad that you chose to join me today. I have a great guest today, Dr. Chloe Carmichael. She's a clinical psychologist. I'll tell you all about her before we get started, but we're going to be focusing on harnessing your anxiety for success with your health and in life. How many of you have suffered with anxiety? It's a very common symptom, and the majority of people go through periods in their life where they actually have anxiety that interferes with their effective daily functioning to a great degree. And that's part of my story too. I went through a period in the perimenopause, and hormones are related to this. And as you know, that's my favorite topic. And in perimenopause, a lot of women will start having anxiety for no reason. And what I will say about that is that there is a reason. It's just that most providers don't know what to look for. So they're going to medicate you with an SSRI or other antidepressant or anxiolytic medication. But that doesn't really fix the reason why you have anxiety. Anxiety can be physically driven, like with hormonal imbalances. It can also occur with certain toxicities. So we're going to dive into that, but also childhood trauma, which we talk a lot about. We're going to dive into that too, but mostly Dr. Chloe has a lot of strategies and tactics for you to start harnessing the power of your anxiety and stop seeing it as something bad, but what you can do about it in the moment. So I'll tell you a little bit about her and then we'll get started. Dr. Chloe Carmichael is a clinical psychologist who serves high-functioning individuals to harness the power of their nervous energy to reach greater success and fulfillment in life. Her book, Nervous Energy, Harness the Power of Your Anxiety, details her stepwise approach to evolving beyond current limitations. Dr. Chloe is an advisory board member for Women's Health Magazine, a featured expert for Psychology Today, and has been featured on VH1, Inside Edition, ABC Nightline, The New York Times, Forbes, Vanity Fair, Rolling Stone, and more. Please help me welcome Dr. Chloe Carmichael. Welcome, Dr. Chloe.
Thanks, Dr. Kieran. It's great to be with you.
So excited to have you on today and talk about harnessing your anxiety for success. As I was telling you before we started recording, most of the women who I work with on their hormones are very high functioning, successful, intelligent women, and they've accomplished a lot. But I love how in your book, Nervous Energy, I think it's in the introduction or first chapter, you tell Amy's story and how she really harnessed using this nervous energy and the skills that she had developed helped her be successful in school and go to grad school. But that at some point, these survival and success strategies stop working for us and can work against us. So can you talk a little bit about this nervous energy and what it is and how it can work for us at certain stages and then work against us later?
Yeah, sure. So basically, as a psychologist working with all of these successful, brilliant, driven people in Manhattan, I just found that a lot of them did tend to have this little extra boost of anxiety. And maybe they had a little bit of a perfectionist streak, or they had what they might even say, oh, I'm a little OCD or I'm obsessive. And they would be coming to me for help with that. And sometimes they would even say, teach me how to get rid of my anxiety. But I would say, look, you know what? We don't actually want to get rid of anxiety. Anxiety does have a healthy function, which is to stimulate preparation behaviors. And usually that person, up until some recent point, which brought them to my office, they had been able to actually harness that positive power of anxiety to maybe do some double checking or have that drive for excellence or think in advance a little bit to do some advanced preparation. But then to your point, Dr. Kieran, one of two things usually tends to happen. Either the person just keeps climbing and ascending up the ladder in terms of responsibility as they grow and succeed, they take on more at work, at home, et cetera. And then there's just no more bandwidth to just constantly be doing everything, getting an A plus on every assignment. It might have worked in high school or college, right, but life gets too complicated for that. So that's one thing that can happen. And then the second thing that can also happen is sometimes we can get almost too good at our own self-discipline. So maybe what a high school or college student had to just exert their maximal force of self-discipline, and that was the right balance to get them through college. But then as their executive load grew, so did their self-discipline. And so constantly always in exerting your absolute maximum self-discipline actually means you're going to be using a heavier and heavier hand the more you grow those skills. And so what might have felt like appropriate at one point becomes almost like an iron fist and too much as you grow and develop those skills.
I think that's so true. It's actually part of my story is that I had these very capable strategies, but I love how you describe in Amy's story that as she ascended, and that's true for me, the projects become more and more amorphous and that there's not enough time in the day to do all the things that you could do. And so what I find with myself and a lot of women is you feel like you're failing at life because it's a never endless, an endless to-do list. And I'm wondering, because most of the people who listen to my podcast and are in my audience are women over 40, what are some of the symptoms that they would identify themselves as having nervous energy? What kind of things would they be experiencing?
Sure. If they're having nervous energy that's not being nurtured and embraced properly, what they might experience is, say, having a big, full to-do list and finding that maybe they actually even are doing everything on it, but they're feeling really empty, like a hamster on a wheel, just knocking out the tasks. Or maybe they have a track record of getting things done and making things happen, but they suddenly feel like they're hitting a wall or having some burnout. Those are some suggestions that maybe their nervous energy has gone a little bit haywire, and we don't want to get rid of it. We actually want to redirect it and learn how to nurture it.
Okay, so redirect and nurture it. What would be some steps? I know you give some great techniques in your book, Nervous Energy, and we don't have time to go through them all. So I highly encourage people to get the book and read it if you're identifying, oh yeah, that's me. I totally identify with it. What would be some simple techniques for...
Sure.
And do you consider people with a lot of nervous energy type A personalities? Is that what you would say?
That's a great question. So I would say yes on the type A thing, just to be in a rough cut using those as kind of colloquial phrases. Yes, it is those of us who are going to have that little extra part of ourselves that likes to be a little bit on point and those kinds of things. But as for the practical ways that a person could nurture and care for and respect that nervous energy, for example, if you do have that to-do list and you're feeling like the hamster on the wheel, or you suddenly have the productivity wall, it seems. The to-do list with emotions is one of my favorite techniques from Nervous Energy, Harness the Power of Your Anxiety. What we do in that one is we look at your to-do list, and then we look at each item and take a deep breath as you look at each item and just look at it. And then ask yourself as you exhale, what is the emotion I feel when I look at this item? And you might be surprised, right? It might be like, say you're looking at grocery shopping and you feel, and you would then, instead of saying to yourself, oh, that doesn't make sense, you would really just note it and observe it. Or maybe you look at grocery shopping and you feel lonely, whatever it might be, if you really take a moment to ask yourself, because people with a lot of drive are sometimes so good at just getting things done and putting their emotions aside, which is actually a good skill to have, but sometimes they get too good at that skill to the point where they disconnect with the emotions. So suppose you say, okay, this is crazy, but I'm feeling angry, feeling lonely when I look at that grocery shopping. Then we ask ourselves why. And so we might say, frankly, I'm angry because why am I the person in my family of four that's always doing this grocery shopping? Or maybe I feel lonely because I'm recently divorced and I'm suddenly only shopping for one. And then once we notice what the emotions are, the important next step and final step is that we layer in a good self-care plan. So suppose, again, you're feeling angry. The self-care plan is, I need to set some boundaries. I need to have a talk with my family. I need to hire a helper, whatever it is. I'm feeling lonely. I need to plan a cell phone catch-up call with a friend while I do my grocery shopping. Because again, people with that nervous energy and that extra drive, they're pretty good at just making sure things get done. And that is a skill, but it can go haywire and almost take on a negative cast if we don't stop and balance it by making sure we're also making time for emotions and caring for ourselves in a methodical way.
Yeah, I love that you bring up this point. And in several places in the book, I see where you did mention the fact that we're living in the doing part of life and the action part of life and the thinking part of life, but we're not as in touch with our emotions when we're more in that high functioning category. And I certainly relate to that and find that with a lot of the women that I work with at midlife, they're so detached from their emotions. When I ask them questions about emotions, how do you feel about that? Because like you're saying, what is the emotion attached to the to-do list? They're so disconnected from their bodies. They haven't really been living in their bodies because feeling lives in the body. What are some ways that you can offer to help us at midlife, particularly women, get into our bodies and get in touch with our emotions? Because I find that so many of us, we don't even know how we feel because we haven't felt for so many years.
Yes. I think first of all, giving ourselves permission and recognizing the value in emotions. A lot of high functioning people, again, they feel almost like they don't want to get stuck in emotions. And it's true, right? Sometimes the mature person does have to learn to put their emotions aside and get things done. But as I mentioned, we can sometimes get too good at those skills to the point where we're doing them automatically. And so a technique like the to-do list with emotion guides us to make sure that we are getting back in touch with them. And to your point about the body, I was a yoga teacher before I was a psychologist, so definitely agree with the body-mind connection. And so just suppose that you do say, okay, I actually feel anger when I look at that grocery shopping list. My next step would then be to also say, okay, well, where does that anger feel in my body? Is it in my chest? Does it have a physical feeling? Is it like a stone? Does it have a weight? Does it have a color? Does it have a sound? Really exploring it. And then getting to the self-care plan part, you can ask that anger what it wants. And sometimes that anger will actually serve its healthy function, which can be to tell you what is the boundary that needs to be reset by it. Again, to answer your question, I think that some of it is logistical, how we get in touch with these things, what through structured exercises like the to-do list with emotion or like those dialogues. But it's also in our mindset. I think especially, as you said, women of a certain age, so to speak, and I'm speaking as a 44-year-old woman myself, we can sometimes feel as if our emotions aren't valid if we feel like they're hormone related. And there's a level of maturity that I do think is important for myself. I'll just share, if I'm having a lot of intense emotions and I know that there's a hormonal component, I do want to make sure I keep a sense of perspective about it. But I also want to make sure I don't discount it all together. I think sometimes hormonal swings can bring our emotions to the fore and make us more aware of what we might have previously been just trying to not focus on. And when it comes bubbling up to the surface, I do think it's really important to listen to it and understand it and not dismiss it outright just for the mere fact of it maybe being connected in awareness to hormones.
Yeah, thank you so much for bringing up the hormone factor. The hormonal system is intricately entwined with the nervous system, and some people call it the slow nervous system, and some people call neurotransmitters hormones. So really, neurotransmitters might be what determine your mood, right? Your serotonin levels, your dopamine levels, but that's intimately involved with your estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, your cortisol, your insulin, all the seven main metabolic drivers that I'm always talking about. So I love what you're saying, that don't discount the maybe the tone or quality of the emotion because you might have some hormonal imbalances. I do think that our psyche brings these messages to us for a reason. But I do know that sometimes if there are hormonal imbalances, it can blow those out of proportion. And if we act from that place, we might do things that we regret. I love that you mentioned boundaries there, and I'm hoping we can dive into that a little more, because I find that so many of us at midlife women, we struggle with boundaries. And I always am teaching my ladies that boundaries aren't only about relationships externally, but they're about internal relationships. Like leaky gut is a boundary disruption. So there are internal boundaries where if we say we're going to do something, do we actually do it? Do we have good boundaries with ourselves? Do we have good boundaries with others? And I don't think that we're necessarily taught that when we're young, and it a lot of times catches up with us at midlife. So can you talk about, for women who are high functioning, but they're also overgivers and they don't know how to have good boundaries, how do they learn how to do this at midlife?
Yeah, I think that's a really good example. And I think it connects with this exercise, for example, around that to-do list with emotions, because mm-hmm. that is in some sense about boundaries. It's about what is on your to-do list. You know, what are you doing for other people and how is it making you feel? So just to unpack that a little further to your question about boundaries. And as you said, during a hormonal, intense hormonal moment, we might feel, as I think you said, out of proportion. Our anger might feel sometimes out of proportion, but that might be because when we're not in a hormonal shift moment, we're too good at putting that anger to the side. And so then when it gets that chance to finally be heard, it can shoot up. And you're absolutely right. That's not the time to necessarily act on it and to reset those boundaries in the moment when we're not really at our most skillful self. But it is a great time to do that step of the to-do list with emotions to brainstorm what would be some good self-care activities, right? So let's say I'm just having that moment and I'm pissed. Why am I doing the grocery shopping for this whole dang family? And why do I have to go to three different grocery stores for blah? And why do I have to also get the money to pay for these bills? And like we can get in our heads in those times, but it's a great time to jot down a brainstorm list of what are all the things I could do. I could insist that we're going to be on a round robin schedule. I could insist everybody's going to do their own shopping. I could hire somebody. I could really journal and write down those emotions. Before we can really be ready to set boundaries, I do think we need to explore the parameters of what those boundaries could be. So again, asking that anger what it wants and writing it all down. Your journal is your safe space. And in that actually mental window of clarity about just how angry you are, take advantage of that and write down all the ideas of all the ways that you think you could act on it. And then maybe the next day, you've given yourself a great gift of a beautiful list of all the actions you could take. And then you can evaluate that menu and proceed from there.
So I love that you have a real practical approach to changing aspects of your life that might not be where you want them. You have real hands-on, actionable tasks. I think that we high achieving individuals love that.
I find it very practical, certainly for myself as well. And that's one of the things I shared in the book too, is these are tools that I use myself. I shared the opening story about Amy, client who came into my office, and how I viewed her through that lens of nervous energy. And then the very next paragraph is, okay, I get Amy because I'm like Amy myself. And I share the stories of how I use these types of techniques, whether it was in graduate school or building my practice when I didn't know if I could even fill my own little tiny office. So I think, as you said, we high achieving women, we do need to find that balance with our drive and our energy, but also how to take good care of ourselves.
Yes, it is a balance. And I love that you said learn, because I honestly don't think that we were taught. I was doing an interview yesterday and was just reminded that just a century ago, we generally only lived to be 50 years old. And so we didn't live a lot of our lives in what I call hormonal poverty. And we didn't have to navigate menopause or even perimenopause to the degree that we have now. And we also didn't have the resources. And now, 100 years later, our lifespan is in our 80s. So we're going to spend probably over a third of our life in hormonal poverty, which affects our neurotransmitters, our mood, our ability to function in the world, our cognitive function, our focus, our mood, our memory. And I think that a lot of what we women at midlife are learning how to navigate right now is this middle passage that our mothers didn't have to navigate. And it's a whole new world. It's a whole new territory. And I'm blessed to have the opportunity to help women understand. I will say that, to me, nervous energy, I try to tie everything into hormonal balance, really does get into your cortisol stress hormone, for those of you struggling with that. And then also, because your emotions tie into that. So if you're not paying attention to the anger or the fear that you're having, then that is going to tie into your cortisol and disrupt cortisol, which ties into all your other major metabolic hormones. So I just want to mention that, because I do try to tie everything to hormonal balance. I love these quotes that you shared with me, and you've got some wonderful ones in the book too. And I'm trying to pick which is my favorite that I want to unpack with you. I think it's this one from Confucius: when it is obvious that the goals cannot be reached, don't adjust the goals, adjust the action steps. So can you talk a little bit about what that means?
Sure. So I will just start by saying I'm a super goal-oriented person, right? I don't like to think that we cannot do something. I love goals. In fact, goal attainment is just one of my areas of specialty. And I think that's why I probably attracted so many nervous energy people in the first place, because we love to grow. And so if we're not, to me, the point of that quote is that if we're not getting where we want to go, we don't have to, that we're unable to get there. We may need to just ask ourselves if perhaps we need to try a different approach, whether it be making a tweak or a different route or something like that. And one of the things that I think is also so important as we do that, is as we are successful in adjusting the action steps, is community, which is why I think it's so great that you have this show and that I can write books and we can share and exchange our ideas. Because as a psychologist, I can tell you that one of the big theories that evolutionary psychologists have as to why our society became so successful, why humans evolved to this incredible society that we did, is because of the gift of language, because we're able to share and exchange and develop ideas by talking and sharing together. And of course, the whole concept of social support, back to cortisol, even just hearing the sound of the voice of somebody that cares about you can start to just decrease those cortisol levels and settle us down. If we're not getting to that goal, talking it over with a friend and having somebody stimulate us to have some fresh ideas can be such a gift, not only in terms of reaching the goal, but of just also knowing that we have a community, we have our people, we have our support network.
Yeah, I think that's so important to mention. The power of community stimulates oxytocin, which is an important hormone for our cortisol as well, our feelings of connection, safety, and security. And it's funny because with my group program, I used to do my work one-on-one, and I realized there's so many women at midlife that need help. I'm never going to get to all help all of them if I do it one-on-one. So I started doing groups. And it's funny because, and maybe you find this too, because I know you do groups, at first people are so resistant to the idea of being vulnerable and having to receive any type of care in a group format. But hands down, at the end of the program, that's what people list as their favorite aspect, was the connection they created. Do you find that? And can you talk a little bit
about— Dr. Kieran, you may need to help me with that one, because you're absolutely right. The issue of getting people to feel comfortable in a group is a stumbling block. And I do have master classes and groups that I've tried to start. I have a private Facebook group for nervous energy, but it's been a real stumbling block. I've tried to let people know, hey, you can show your video or not. You can use your real voice, or you can just chat in. And people just, they want that one-to-one attention. And like you said, I'm just not at a place where I have that bandwidth. And so I'm still trying to get people into doing it in the group. So if anyone is listening to this and they think, you know what, Dr. Chloe, I'd be up to join your group, I'm just going to say, you can join one of my groups free of charge. If you're listening to this and you say, I want to get in one of Dr. Chloe's groups, shoot me a DM over Instagram or any social media or through my website. Tell me what you heard on this podcast, and I will get you into something, and I won't charge you, just because, as Dr. Kieran says, it is really hard to get people in those groups. But once they're in them, it's the best thing in the world, because it's like, in psychology, we call it the need-fear dilemma. A lot of times the things that we need are also the things that we fear. You hit on one of the goals I have, and I don't want to change my goal. I'm trying to change my action steps. And that is to try to get a group where people would be willing to be vulnerable and open.
Yeah, I can't say enough. I even have one group who started with me, and they are so connected now. Of course, they all text and talk all the time, but they meet on Zoom without me now. And it's so funny because they sent me an email saying, we just want you to know we're meeting on Zoom. I'm like, okay, great. That's awesome. Creating a community around what you're struggling with and dealing with and getting yourself the support, I have found, is hands down the most valuable action step. But another challenge that I find that women at midlife who are successful, so all the women in my programs are like professionals with advanced degrees, very successful. But we have this mentality, and I used to have this too. I'm smart. I'm going to figure this out myself on Dr. Google and Instagram, and I can do it myself. And we don't realize that sometimes we need to, if what we're doing is not working, like Dr. Phil, he'd say, how's that working for you? And I'm like, you're getting the crappy results with your hormones, your weight, your sleep, all the things, because you think you're supposed to be able to figure it out because you have a degree in economics, but you don't have a medical degree. How do we, those of us who are really intelligent and can figure a lot of stuff out, let go and ask for help and actually receive help and the expertise of somebody else? How do we do that?
Yeah, so it takes me actually back in some ways to my yoga teacher days. So sometimes when I would be working with students, you know, that were technically able to like hoist or force their body into some contorted position, but it actually wasn't good for them to get into that position because their body really wasn't quite strong enough, ready enough, et cetera. And I would often say to them, just because you can doesn't mean you should. It doesn't mean that's really the best way for you to do this. And so I would say that, number one, even if people feel that they, quote, can get that information, which Dr. Kieran, I understand, is even dubious, right, as to the quality of the information that a layperson is able to discern on medical internet. But let's even just suppose that you can get that information and figure it out yourself. Doesn't even mean you should. It doesn't even mean that's really the best way for you to get it, right? If you want to really receive that information, being able to be in a place where you're with somebody that you trust, that you can feel safe and open up with, with, that's how your body and mind are going to be actually best able to really receive and digest the information in the first place. I would also just go to one more thing, again, from my yoga teacher days, is to take a holistic Buddhist view here. In Buddhism, we have three jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Buddhists say that without the three jewels, they would not even expect Buddhism to be helpful to people. The three jewels, the Buddha, obviously, what we know what the Buddha is. The Dharma is the teachings of the Buddha, and the Sangha is the community. So they're saying, if you're just like doing this all by yourself in a vacuum, it's not going to be the same. And medical studies have shown as well, when people practice mindfulness and they skip the step of writing down or verbalizing what their observations are, it doesn't help them as much. So don't deprive yourself of that Sangha. And if you're lucky enough that your Sangha can include the right professionals, why deprive yourself?
I think that's so true. And I went to medical school and have all this medical training, but in terms of marketing so people know what I have to offer, I don't know anything about that. So that's why I have coaches that I pay to help me understand how to speak so that people can find the information that I have to share and guidance. I love that. I think you talk about metacognition. I can't find it real quick in the book. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's very helpful for people.
Sure. So I connect metacognition to mindfulness because mindfulness has become like almost such a buzzword these days that people don't even really know what it means. And in my book, there are 9 techniques and I explain, it's like a cookbook. You don't have to do them in order. You don't have to do them all. You can just choose which techniques you want to do. With one exception, the first technique is a mindfulness technique because I believe people need to really understand and observe what their anxiety is about before they can really choose the right technique that's going to help them. And I explain that for people who hear mindfulness and they think, oh, new age woo-woo stuff, not interested. I explain to them that in fact, in my view, mindfulness is really tantamount to metacognition. Meta going back to that Greek word of meaning overall, and cognition being about your thoughts. So the ability to see yourself overall in your thoughts helps you to know the best technique to use. Many people say, why would I need help to know about my thoughts? I'm having them. I don't need any help knowing what my thoughts are. And to that, I would say, have you ever found yourself snapping irritably at a clerk in a store somewhere and only in that moment when you heard your voice snapping say, oh, my gosh, I'm under stress. Wow, I'm irritable. Or, oh, geez, I haven't eaten all day long. Oh, my gosh, I'm starving. I'm about to faint. And again, because high-functioning people can get so busy, so stuck on their goals or whatever, they can lose the forest for the trees sometimes and not have that presence of mind, that metacognition to see, wow, I am getting a little tightly wound here. And so when we practice that mindfulness and that metacognition to go to that level of awareness and then even a little deeper to really understand, okay, is this anxiety about A, B, or C? And would this anxiety benefit from a let go and breathe and relax type technique? Or would this anxiety actually be better served by a learn how to lean and focus and face my fears technique? It's going to be a different technique depending on the nature of the anxiety. Mm-hmm. And we have to have those good metacognition skills to be able to really mindfully observe the anxiety so we can choose the best tool.
Yeah, I love what you're describing. And as you're talking, I'm being reminded of a few clients I've worked with in my program where snapping at the clerk or feeling stressful or I'm wound up, they didn't even realize it was happening. And what really brought it to their attention was when they saw in black and white what their hormones were doing because of the way they were feeling. And when they see how their hormones are disrupted, and then they say, oh my gosh, what's causing this? And I ask them, what were you thinking and feeling when your hormones were out of balance? And usually then they'll come back and say, oh yeah, I didn't realize I was feeling upset, angry, sad, irritable. And that's how they get to make that tie in. So I find for a lot of us high functioning women, we're so out of touch with how we feel. And so I love looking at the hormone balance because then I can say, yeah, this is what your body is saying. what's the feeling behind it? So they, I find that a lot of women, we have to work it backwards.
You're right. It's such a feedback loop. The mm-hmm. things we think affects our brain chemistry and our hormones. Mm-hmm. And of course, then our brain chemistry and our hormones affect the way that we feel. It's such an intricate little dance. And as you said, we can sometimes even want to push those things out of our awareness, because we can feel like it's selfish or indulgent to just be like, oh, I'm just going to focus on my sadness or my pain, or I'm going to think about myself. And we almost conflate the difference between selfishness and self-awareness. Mm. And so then when in our desire to like not be too self-centered and be willing to put aside the fact that maybe we're having a rough day because we don't want to be selfish, we go a little too far, and we sometimes then lose our self-awareness, which is where that mindfulness and metacognition come in so handy.
Yes, we've got to have the self-awareness, the hormone awareness. We've got to be aware of what's going on in ourselves so that we can do what you shared in another quote from George Bernard Shaw: life isn't about finding yourself. Life is about creating yourself. So I want to give a call to action to everybody listening. What are you creating in your life? You get to create this time at midlife and beyond. You get to say what it's going to look like. You get to determine what your health is going to be like, your energy, your weight, your mind. And so what actions are you going to take today to do it differently and harness the power of your nervous energy, like Dr. Chloe has shared with us? Dr. Chloe has an amazing Insiders Club, and she's going to give you 1 week free access to it. You can click the link in the show description to access it. Can you tell them a bit about what your Insiders Club is, Dr. Chloe?
Yes, absolutely. So also people just listening, and maybe they don't see the show notes, easy link to remember is nervousenergybook.com. And I would love to welcome anyone to my Insiders Club. So what it is, it's a big collection of videos and things that I was not wanting to totally put on the internet and share with the public entirely, because some of it's intimate. Like, I do some workshops about things like charging what you're worth, or some kind of deeper personal, even dating and relationship stuff. And to your point, Karen, about wanting to get out there and bring your message to many, but at the same time, retain a little bit of that sense of privacy and not have it all totally out there, I thought the Insiders Club would be a nice happy medium. And we also try to do some like Google Hangouts and chats and stuff and group hangouts. But I will admit, like I said, I'm struggling to find people that really want to show their face, make their voice heard. They come in and they watch the videos, which I love. And then like I hold little events sometimes, and I am struggling to find people that are really willing to step out of the shadows. So I just want to say again, the Insiders Club, free for a week. And then if you're also interested in being a vocal participating member, you know, of a group, I'm happy to just offer you a free seat at one of my groups.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that wonderful resource. And it's funny you said step out of the shadows. Where health and healing are is in the light. It doesn't happen in the shadows. It doesn't happen with you hiding in your house. I talked to a woman yesterday to see what she was needing help with her hormones. And she says, I've become a hermit. I work from home. I don't go anywhere. And it's because I don't feel like myself anymore. So healing doesn't happen in the shadows. It happens in the light. So I know there are those of you who are called to the light. That's why you're here, because Chloe and I are both light workers. And so if you're here listening, then you are drawn to the light, and that's where your healing is going to happen. Thank you so much, Dr. Chloe, for joining us today, for sharing this amazing book that you've created and insight that can help us be more abundant and healthy at midlife.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kieran. There is just one more thing I wanted to mention for people that do love audio stuff, is that I wanted to make it really clear with the publisher that we had to also have an audiobook. So there is also an audiobook, which I think is so nice for people that they just want to hear the message as opposed to necessarily sitting and reading it. So the book is available in hardcover, Kindle, or audiobook. And if anyone loves the book and wants to do me a favor, I would love a review on Amazon too.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I love audiobooks. audiobooks too. So definitely check out the audiobook if you're thinking, I don't have time to sit and read a book, but you could listen to it on your commute or when you're traveling. Definitely check that out. Thank you so much, Dr. Chloe.
Thanks, Dr. Kieran.
Thank you so much for listening. I know that incredible vitality occurs for women over 40 when we learn to speak hormone and balance these vital regulators to create the health and the life that we deserve. If you're enjoying this podcast, I'd love it if you'd give me a review and subscribe. It really does help this podcast out so much. You can visit thehormoneprescription.com where we have some free gifts for you, and you can sign up to have a hormone evaluation with me on the podcast to gain clarity into your personal situation. Until next time, remember, take small steps each day to balance your hormones and watch the wonderful changes in your health that begin to unfold for you. Talk to you soon.